the new book, Youth Voting Rights, Civil Rights, the 26th Amendment, and the Fight for American Democracy on College Campuses, is officially out tomorrow and uses the history of the 26th Amendment and the ongoing fight to promote and defend youth voting rights as a prism through which to teach the history of the struggle for the fundamental right to vote in the United States of America. The book centers on case studies of four institutions: Tuskegee University, Prairie View A&M University, North Carolina A&T State University, and Bard College, which offer unique insights into the role of college communities in the fight for suffrage and their contributions to the evolution of the right to vote. There will be a book launch and a documentary screening tomorrow in Rhinebeck, where you can join the editors of the book, Jonathan Becker and Yael Bromberg, at 5 p.m. at Upstate Films at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck for a conversation about the film and a film screening of four short documentaries which illustrate the fight for voting rights on U.S. college campuses. Jonathan Becker stays with us this morning to talk about the new book that he has written, I believe, three chapters for?
That's correct.
Three chapters, and obviously co-edited as well. Really nice to have you on for the panel. Thank you for doing that, and thank you for coming in to talk about the book as well. What got you involved in this project? I assume it started with what was going on at BART.
Yeah, so it's sort of an interesting story. I had spent 6 years in Eastern Europe, in Russia, then a year and a half in Ukraine, in Czech Republic, in Hungary. This was just after the Berlin Wall had fallen. I was a volunteer teacher in Ukraine to start with and was promoting things like democracy and human rights to a new area. I witnessed elections going on in this period, which people were incredibly enthusiastic. Then I came to BARD in 1997, and I didn't really focus on the issue because in my life I had always voted absentee. I had lived abroad, went to university abroad. And then some students came up to me and said, basically, we're not allowed to vote locally. And I was like, what? I didn't really process that. And then I met with a student group called Students Activists for Voting Equality, who explained that students in Dutchess County were systematically denied the right to register and vote locally. And that led really a 25-year quest to support student voting rights at BARD.
How did that become the situation? How did that become the issue?
Right. So very simply, in Dutchess County and in New York State counties, you have boards of election. And an election commissioner at that time, William Paroli, simply refused to register student voters. They were sent a questionnaire asking questions like, where do you plan to live after you study? Who pays for your rent? And things like that. And students were simply denied the opportunity to register to vote. And this was extremely problematic for a number of reasons. First of all, some students had nowhere else to vote. They came from their parents' house, their parents moved, or they were from Dutchess County itself and faced challenges. In those days, the election commissioner, both commissioners would have to agree in order to register someone. He refused simply outright, in spite of Supreme Court decisions, in spite of federal decisions in New York State, which emerged from SUNY New Paltz. He simply refused to register voters. So at that point, I ended up working with a group of student activists who, from BARD and Vassar, who were fighting for the right to vote in Dutchess County.
I remember, as the story was unfolding, reading it and thinking to myself, isn't this one of those things where you just go down to the town hall and say, hey, well, I think you missed. We just need to, like, let's get together and have a meeting and we'll clear this up. And then instead it becomes this thing that is gigantic and really hard to overcome.
Well, these are the lessons that we take from this, right? So in that case, the county created a commission to look at the issue. The commission finally says, not only do students have the right to vote here, but we should support it. And we also, working with the New York Civil Liberties Union, basically said, if you don't give the students the right to vote, we'll sue you and we'll win. But then it wasn't even clear that the students had won until Mr. Paroli was convicted of unrelated felonies, removed from office, and a new commissioner came in. And even then, it took several months before they registered student voters. But that was the initial phase of this, was how do you get students the right to vote? But even since then, there have been battles throughout the time at Bard, and the book talks about them, but it also talks about how these are similar to cases at other institutions across the country.
So let us talk about the three other colleges and universities that you look at in the book. I mean, they all have the similarity in the sense of the issue of voting rights, but they are very different in how the problems developed. And through this and through these case studies, what did you learn?
Yeah, so we learned a lot. First of all, the other three institutions are historically Black colleges and universities. And if we're talking about authoritarianism in present-day America, we could say there was authoritarianism in the Jim Crow era amongst these institutions. But they all tell different stories of how you fight for democratic rights. Tuskegee University was a case where I mentioned in the previous conversation that in 1957, a law was passed which essentially gerrymandered all Black voters, all but 10 Black voters, out of the city of Tuskegee, including the entire Tuskegee Institute. So in this case, you have a case of a faculty leader, Charles Gamillion, who was a sociologist, who headed the Tuskegee Civic Association, who led both a boycott and litigation, which ended up before the Supreme Court 65 years ago last week. And in that case, the court ruled, and this is an interesting lesson, that racial gerrymandering is impermissible. They looked at the map. The city of Tuskegee used to be a square map, right? And out of the gerrymander became what was called a 28-sided sea serpent. And the justices, who had previously ruled that this is a matter of states, looked at this and found it so problematic, such a violation of rights, that they ruled in favor of Gamillion and Tuskegee in 1960. But moreover, which is interesting of that case, is the violations were so egregious that the first people to speak before the newly created United States Commission on Human Rights, United States Commission on Civil Rights in 1958, were people from Tuskegee. Here you had professors who could vote in Boston, people who had PhDs who were denied the right to vote locally, who were not registered in the first instance, and then those who were registered had been gerrymandered out. So it was a lesson in that case of how faculty could take a lead. Another case, which is really interesting, was Prairie View A&M University, which is in Prairie View, Texas. And here you have the only U.S. Supreme Court case looking at the 26th Amendment. So the 26th Amendment lowered the voting age from 21 to 18, and outlawed discrimination based on age in terms of voting. And here you had students taking the lead and working with other organizations, including the NAACP Legal Defense Fund. They sue for the right to vote locally. Students there were given questionnaires remarkably similar to the ones that students at Bard received years later. So if Tuskegee was a case of faculty leading, in Prairie View, the students led and they won a Supreme Court case. And not only did they win the Supreme Court case, they've had other cases since then where they've been defending the right to vote. And then finally, North Carolina A&T is a modern case. Here you have a campus, the largest historically Black college and university, the home of the Greensboro Four, who had the protest at the lunch counter at Woolworths, and their campus was divided in two by a gerrymander. And so if we're talking about today, does racism still exist within the political sphere? Well, there were only two institutions in North Carolina which were targeted, North Carolina A&T and Fayetteville State University, both HBCUs. And here you have a case of students working with Common Cause of North Carolina to fight this. So you have three cases, one led by a faculty, Gamillion, a second led by students, Prairie View A&M, and I would say North Carolina A&T is somewhat similar. And then you had the Bard case, which was interesting because it wasn't just the students. The students began it, but over time, because this is a 25-year battle, it was handed over to the administration. So the final chapter of the Bard story is about a fight for a polling place on campus.
Right.
And in that, not only are students litigants, but Bard's president, Leon Botstein, and our vice president for student affairs, Aaron Canaan, served as litigants as well. So you have a case where the institution is putting itself on the line to fight for student voting rights.
The name of the new book is Youth Voting Rights, and Jonathan Becker is with us as co-editor and author of several of the chapters in the new book. What is it that I'm interested in how this all fits into the current state of where we are when it comes to voting rights in this country? Because as you look at these four cases, and as you say, some have been going on for decades, and then last month, Supreme Court heard a case, and we're maybe even anticipating of what's going to happen with just the gutting of the Voting Rights Act.
Right. So that is an incredibly frightening circumstance. I think the lessons we try to draw from the book are not, it's not that elections solve all things, right? It's more about the fight for the right to vote. How did different groups, how did a faculty member at Tuskegee University, how did students at Prairie View UNM, how did students, faculty, and administrators at Bard fight for this right to vote, right? How do you engage in a system of encroaching authoritarianism to defend these democratic rights? Now, students are particularly vulnerable, and there are many initiatives by the current administration and in many states which are particularly damaging to students. These might be limits on absentee ballots. They might be acceptance of identification cards while accepting those from like a gun license, but rejecting a student identity card, right, as a means of identifying yourself. And these are for me, I'm an educator first and foremost, right? And all of the data says that if an 18-year-old votes, they're more likely to vote throughout their lives. So here we stand looking at students in particular being denied the voting rights. That's what's happening right now. It is accelerating. And the question for me is, what can students do about that? What can faculty do about it? And what can colleges and universities do about that?
Colleges and universities are in such a precarious place anyway right now that those have to bump up against each other, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, this is a real valuable question. Here's what I would say. So the United States has a tradition going back to Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, through the Truman Commission after the Second World War, which highlights the link between education, civic engagement, and democracy, right? We fully believe in this. So the question is, do universities, if universities believe this, if in matriculation and graduation speeches we talk to students about going forth and changing the world, what do we as institutions do when confronted with gross violation of the rights of our students, of the most sacred of democratic rights, right? Our answer at Bard was the Board of Trustees stood up and they passed a resolution supporting student voting rights. Our president stood up and served as a litigant in a battle over this. Now, there's some minutiae here, right? Universities are required by the Higher Education Reauthorization Act to make a good faith effort to make registration materials available to students. Well, that's fine. You could send them an email. But the real question is, do we really help to young people who are vulnerable register? And if their rights are violated, are we going to stay forward? And my answer is, we're educators. When an institution, when a dean or a vice president or a president stands up and says, we value you, we value this democratic right, and we're going to stand up for you, we are teaching a lesson which transcends what goes on in the classroom. We are modeling behavior, which is really important. So at this time when we're fighting the most difficult of battles, to have faculty stand up, to have students stand up, and to have institutions stand up is really important. Now, there's some downside of this. I can tell you there's a number of institutions which did not take that step.
Yes.
New York State passed a law largely because, again, the Bard case was so ridiculous. Colleges with 300 or more registered voters on campus can have a polling place on campus. Well, some campuses, some leaders did not agree to host a polling site, for example, right? And I consider that to be an unfortunate tragedy. Or they left it to faculty to litigate the issue. We think this is central to our educational process, and therefore it is something worth defending.
I have an eye on the clock here, but yeah. It is another part of this, too, is that then you have to make sure. I remember one of the big questions when the polling place opened and is there on Bard, okay, are the kids going to show up? Are they actually going to be there? Are they
going to? No, right.
Are they going to show up?
Absolutely.
And they did.
Yeah. I mean, one of the frustrations in fighting this battle, so I like the battle a little bit. It's of my own nature. But in the time we're spending trying to assure that students can vote on campus, right? Or in the time, look, when we got a polling on campus, it was the COVID era.
Right.
And the election commissioner in Dutchess County, Eric Haight, so wanted to deprive students of the right to vote that he refused to put a polling place on campus, even though the people who ran a church down the road where we're supposed to vote said it's not safe here. And even though we provided evidence saying BART is much safer. So we litigated, and only after, the day after we lost, right, we lose the case, and then the day after they moved two other poll sites. And they had said, we can't move poll sites because it will confuse people. And when they did that, we filed an appeal and we won, right? And the judge said, isn't the problem that, you know, that your colleague, you know, lied to the judge, right? Well, once we've won this, we're able to work with students on educating them and on teaching them what is involved. And the more time we could spend educating them about elections and not simply asserting their right to vote, the better we are as educators and as a democracy.
The name of the new book, Voting, Youth Voting Rights, Civil Rights, the 26th Amendment, and the Fight for American Democracy on College Campuses. There will be a book launch and documentary screening tomorrow in Rhinebeck at 5 p.m. You can join the editors of the book, Jonathan Becker, who is our guest this morning, Yael Bromberg. Again, 5 p.m. at Upstate Films at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck for a conversation about the book and a film screening of four short documentaries which illustrate the fight for voting rights on U.S. college campuses. I'll end with this question, but it doesn't always have to be a fight, but it probably always will be, right?
I hope not. I think Ed Bard and I think New York State has taking the lead of passing some legislation to make sure that it's easier for students to vote. I hope other states do, but I'm afraid it's going to go on for a while, and it's getting worse before it will be worse before it gets better.
It's a real pleasure to have you on the program. I hope you come. Will you come back? Will you do this regularly? I know you're out and about a lot, but we'd love to have you come back.
It'll be less than the 25 years since the last time I planned to come here.
I look forward to it. It's been fun for me. Thank you very, very much. Again, the name of the book, Youth Voting Rights, and the book is just out. There is a book launch at Upstate Films at the Star Theater in Rhinebeck.
And tickets are free, by the way. You just have to reserve them online.
And there is a link. If you go there, you'll see the link, and it's very, very easy. All of that going on. Jonathan Becker, thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.